Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
The Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a big radio, copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production here with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe. So happy that you're here today. We've got a great show. Sharon Drew Morgan is founder of Morgan Facilitations, Inc., and she's a visionary behind buying facilitation. The decision facilitation model, She Sells Seashells, that enables people to charge and change with integrity. And we'll talk more about that. She is also a New York Times bestseller, business bestseller author, Selling with Integrity, out of Austin, Texas. We're going to talk with Sharon Drew here in just a moment here at the Advertising Show. Jeremy Kent also with us here momentarily, too. Jeremy is our European correspondent and each and every week provides us with incredibly cool content. But what's going on over there? And over there this week, the government is getting involved, which is, I think, an interesting thing, in alcohol advertising. And what the makers of the products that are sold over there are getting together to try and even the scale, so to speak, and have enough leverage that they can indeed control what they say. In other words, so they're not steamrolled by the British government. So that's among some of the few things that Jeremy's going to talk about here as well on the Advertising Show. Speaking of liquor and food.
I'll take one.
Okay. Sure. Condé Nast they had the publisher, Condé Nast. There was the gourmet magazine, the food magazine, that went belly up, so to speak. I guess that's a good way to put it. Gourmet Live is going to be launching. They're bringing it back in a live version later this year as an application for the Apple iPad. Good idea. I mean, it was a well-respected and incredibly cool application. Has been around for 68 years. So bring it back and bring it back in a brand new form. Recipes, stories, pictures, videos from the magazine's archives, as well as new material. So Condé Nast announced that about a week ago. The publisher said reviving with the goal of being available across a variety of platforms and devices. So it sounds like one of those things where a company goes into bankruptcy and reemerges a new company, as opposed to the magazine just going away. And I know it's always nice to be able to pick up a magazine, look at it, and page through it. But at least Gourmet is back in the market. Condé Nast, by the way, also owns The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, Vogue, Wired, and other magazines. So it's not the only thing that they have their hand in. So good news, huh? Especially for food aficionados.
Pass the salt. Hey, you mentioned Jeremy, and he's Jeremy Kent's, our man out of London, who provides us with news and information about media around the globe, but mostly out of Europe. And I wanted to just also say thank you big time for all the wonderful folks around the globe that are following us on iTunes. I'm sorry, on Twitter, I should say. Also, our Facebook page is getting more and more followers each week. Thank you to Varanji Vora, our associate producer that handles a lot of that, and Ariel Santillan as well. Cabe Lindsay, a new producer with our show that's going to be doing some web development work and freshening up our website. You'll be noticing some changes here in the next several weeks at theadvertisingshow.com. So I'm getting all these plugs out of the way before I mention, Ray,
yes,
that CBS Television Distribution is said to be seeking big price hikes for commercials in the Oprah Winfrey Show last season of syndication. Crazy numbers are being thrown around, like $500,000 to $1 million per spot for her final episode.
Oh, the stupid rate. That's the one that is on the right there. Yeah, okay, I got it, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes, but I wouldn't be surprised if they would line up for those kind of rates. I know several weeks ago, Ray, you talked about the Super Bowl selling out early. I read something a few days ago about NFL fall season is already getting decent rates for the upfront for NFL football, mm-hmm. and a bunch of executives in Cannes recently were talking about an encouraging uptick in the world of advertising. So I think advertising precedes the economic uptick as well, the anticipating better times forward. So I think this is all positive and good, and it's a favorable thing.
I think so, too. And more good news is it reported by Inside Radio. You know, this has been a stronger start to the year than we've seen in a very long time. Well, a couple of years, to be specific, for radio advertising. And according to Inside Radio, the industry is in the middle of what are typically the most critical few months of the year in terms of revenue generation, i.e. summer ain't exactly the hottest time. But the analyst Jim Boyle, in his monthly report to Inside, said the momentum built over the last 6 months is not slowing down. And I think that's great. I'm glad to see that that is coming back. And speaking of radio, this is interesting as well. You know, high-definition radio, yeah, it's out there. Yeah, it's being used in some markets effectively by some companies and such, but not probably as effectively as it should. The High-Def Radio Alliance aired about 1.3 million radio spots in the past year. A large number of those ads, promotional announcements run by member stations free of charge, others paid through funding. But high-def radio is not as, to me, it's kind of in the middle as what we might think of as the next level would be in-car web listening. So high-def radio, Brett, suffers from a lack of coverage. In other words, they haven't quite got the coverage down yet. And yeah, yes, you get it.
So the million spots, who's hearing them, right, Ray?
Exactly. And do you have the patience for the dropouts and things like that that you experience with high def when in-car web listening is something that is going to be rolling out here? So and they're having some technical issues, as you would expect with that as well. But to me, if I were a station or a provider of information or entertainment or anything, I go ahead and I'm not suggesting high def is a bad thing, but I think look ahead a little bit further and get it fixed so when it comes possible, you've got the ability to run with a web car listing as well. So I think that's where it's at. Anyway, with that said, we've got to take a break here. Jeremy Kent is with us here at the Advertising Show. Sharon Drew Morgan is coming up next on the Advertising Show. Stay right here.
Hello and welcome to the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. Coming up, alcohol brands unite to avoid regulation, a gin brand in social media push, and KFC is on the menu for breakfast. The UK's Conservative-led coalition government has been talking about tightening up on the way alcohol is marketed, and the country's leading drinks brands and major retailers have come together in an attempt to forestall the prospect of new legislation and silence some very vociferous lobby groups. The Portman Group is the drinks company's industry body, and it has produced several voluntary codes of practice over the years that cover a raft of marketing activity, including labelling. However, earlier this year it emerged that just 15% of drinks carry the information required under the present voluntary scheme. Under the threat of legally enforceable labelling requirements, the Portman Group has obtained pledges from its major members that they will improve their labelling, which should result in compliance reaching at least 81%. Whether that's going to be enough to stave off new legislation remains to be seen. Staying with the drinks industry, and gin brand Bombay Sapphire has launched a global social media campaign. At the centre of the programme is an app that encourages individuals to build a mosaic portrait of themselves, compiled from images that represent different aspects of their lives. Users can then share the mosaic with friends, allowing interaction in the form of shared memories and experiences, but each individual's mosaic will be unique. The app is a continuation of the There's Something Inside campaign and can be downloaded from Bombay Sapphire's website or the brand's Facebook fan page. It uses Facebook's Connect technology, and the whole campaign seems to be an inventive use of social media that is in tune with why people use Facebook. The campaign was developed by Shift Global in the United States, but it broke in the UK first and will roll out to the US and the rest of the world later. Whether it was a night on the town or just any night, Britons have not been turning to KFC for their breakfast. KFC has now reviewed its breakfast menu and store opening times after an initial trial period failed to draw in the early birds. The trial was introduced at its flagship restaurant at London's Marble Arch back in late 2008, and then rolled out later to England's northeast. Participating restaurants opened 4.5 hours earlier than usual at 6 a.m. and served breakfast until 10:30. KFC's new offer has been introduced to selected restaurants in Glasgow, Plymouth, Cardiff and London. The revised menu reflects a change from the large portions offered before and now includes breakfast staples such as bacon, egg and sausage rolls and sandwiches. This is Jeremy Kent in London for The Advertising Show.
Thanks much to Jeremy Kent here at The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Always a pleasure, Jeremy. You get the update from the UK. Sharon Drew Morgan, our special guest out of Austin. Huh, what a great city. Founder of Morgan Facilitations, Inc. We told you that. She's the visionary behind buying facilitation. She's a pioneer who has spoken about, written about, and taught the skills to help buyers buy. And she is the author of the acclaimed New York Times bestseller, business bestseller, that is, Selling with Integrity. And Sharon Drew, it is such a pleasure to have you here at the Advertising Show. Welcome.
I'm excited to be speaking with you.
Well, great. Nice to have you here.
Thanks.
Yeah, Sharon Drew, I wanted to ask you to get your take on this. We've been talking about Jeremy. We just heard from Jeremy out of London. Our economy has changed. Everyone knows that. Some say these changes may be permanent. The business marketplace has become a global marketplace with global competition, global resources, and no longer is one's product enough to sustain a business. So I wanted to ask you, what skills does it take for a successful company to compete on a global platform these days?
One of the first things that needs to happen is that we have to stop thinking about selling our product. Because no matter how good our products are, no matter how wonderful our advertising or marketing or presentations are, if the buyer doesn't buy, it doesn't matter what we have. And in these times, what's happening is that companies are building up their stakeholder teams. Our stakeholder teams are international. They don't know each other. And yet they have to make decisions together. So how can we help our buyers make the decisions they need to make to get the appropriate buy-in from their stakeholders so they can choose to make a purchase? Because our products are... That's not the problem. How do we align the entire decision-making team so that they stand behind the decision to make a purchase?
Well, don't you think, Sharon Drew, that it's really about gaining customers' trust? And if that is the case, how do we go about retaining our customers, especially considering all of the consumer options that are available today?
It's actually even beyond trust. Because I think Dave, we're doing a really good job of giving good customer service and having good product. I think we're doing that. But what's happening is that behind the scenes, selling, advertising, marketing has never been able to go into the home of the buyer and been there when the couple's having a fight. Or going into the corporation and managed the tech team who's trying to take over. We're never there behind the scenes. So we give great content and great service, and we create a lot of trust. But we don't know how to go internal, offline, private. And that's where the buying decision gets made. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, early on in your book, Sharon Drew, you tell a story. It's actually your own story about how you learned to help buyers buy. I'd like you to share that, if you would, with our audience, please.
I was a salesperson for a lot of years, and I was a million-dollar producer. I was good. And no matter how good I was, there were always far too many people that didn't buy. And I thought they were stupid. I mean, I just thought buyers were stupid because obviously they had a need. Obviously they liked me. They trusted me. Their product was good. Their price was fine. What the hell was their problem? And like all salespeople, we used to sit and bemoan our fate. I was good enough so that I had some investors that sent me to England and Germany. And I started up a little company over there, a little tech company in the 80s. And I realized at that time what the problem was with sales and with buyers. So here I am, a buyer. Here I've got a company. My then husband and I were not getting along. We ended up getting a divorce. And he worked for me. I hired him to be my tech guy. So we were having personal issues, and yet we were growing so fast, we really needed team building training. Then we were growing so fast, we needed to move. And so were we supposed to move? Were we supposed to get another 1,000 square feet? There were all kinds of internal decisions that I had to make that had to do with what was going on with my almost future ex-husband, but I didn't know, and my investors who would just drop over at will, and the economy in England, which under Maggie Thatcher was not doing so well. It was a horrific recession at that time. So I had these fabulous, brilliant, lovely salespeople presenting their wonderful products. And no matter how good they were, I couldn't make a decision until all the internal stuff I was going through got managed somehow. And I realized that the salespeople, as wonderful as they and their products were, had no model to help me with my decision issues. And at that point, I realized two things. One, sales only handles needs assessment and solution placement. And two, sales handles the identified problem as if it were an isolated event and doesn't realize that it's part of a system that it lives and breathes in. So even though I needed a sales a team building training program, I had internal issues that had to do with husband, ex-husband relationships, moving, new people. They couldn't help with that. So what I did was I developed a model to add to the front end of the sales process that actually helps the buyer recognize and manage all of those internal issues they have to address first so they can get ready to make a purchase. We usually sit and wait while they do that and don't know where they are. So I've just given a new toolkit to the salespeople, and now there's a change management model and a sales model.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth here with our very special guest out of Austin. This weekend, it is Sharon Drew Morgan, author of the New York Times business bestseller, Selling with Integrity. We're going to continue our conversation here on the Advertising Show in just a moment, being powered by Shipple. It's SCHIPUL.com and a platform called Tenancy. Excuse me. An incredible marketing platform. Check it out at Shipple.com. Back in just a moment with more on the Advertising Show.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
On The Advertising Show, Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth. Welcome back. So glad you're here. Sharon Drew Morgan is founder of Morgan Facilitations, Inc. and also author of Dirty Little Secrets, Why Buyers Can't Buy and Sellers Can't Sell. DirtyLittleSecretsBook.com, by the way, is the website. Sharon Drew, a pleasure to have you here at the Advertising Show.
Thank you, guys. You're fun.
Yeah, and we understand we're talking to Sharon out of Austin, Sharon Drew out of Austin today. I think it must be Far East Austin, according to her accent there, wouldn't you say, Ray?
Far East.
I used to live in London. That's why.
Ah, oh. That explains it. Okay. Now, this is she did not live in what's that little town that heads in Columbus or something like that on I-70. Go ahead, Brad.
Sharon Drew, let's talk a little bit about a wonderful concept that's trademarked in your book called buying facilitation. I think it's something that our audience could really benefit from. It's a new way to sell that influences and expands decisions. Before you explain the concept, how did you come up with the idea for buying facilitation?
Well, when I realized in my company, the story I just told you about starting a company and I had problems and I couldn't buy anything because of the internal issues, once I realized that the sales model was based on needs analysis and solution placement and that nothing helped the buyer manage all of those internal offline political issues that go on without salespeople, once I realized that, then I was able to figure out what needed to happen for me and my group to make the decisions we needed to make so we could choose products. salespeople and never were able to help me with that. So I developed this model. It's really a change management model that I teach sellers. And they can then teach the buyer how to make a buying decision and bring together all of their elements. So, for example, when a very large bank in England called to see if I could do a front-end solution for a very large piece of technology, instead of saying, oh, wow, cool, let me gather data, let me come over and meet you guys so that I can give you a proposal, the first thing I heard was, oh, my goodness, this is one of the largest banks in the world. Why isn't their tech team doing it? Because the first thing I address are the internal systems issues that need to be managed way before I even think about selling or finding out what their need is. So the first thing I said to this man, who is the head of commercial banking, I said, so what's stopping your tech team from taking care of that for you? And he said, ah, good point. He said, they're trying, but I know that even though they're reading your books, that they can't figure out how to help the buyers decide, and that they need you. So what I hear you saying is that your tech team is going to take this over, and that the rest of the buying decision team is going to have to choose between what I have to offer and what they have to offer, compare price, and figure out if the outcome is going to be similar, or are they going to choose me? Because there was an internal systems issue. There was an internal political issue. It had nothing to do with how wonderful my solution was. So we figured out to put together the buying decision team. This is the first call. So on Monday, we figured out the five people that had to be involved. And again, this has got nothing to do with my solution. We never discussed my solution. We discussed how they were going to choose something new, how they were going to know that they were going to get their needs met, how all the people were going to work together to move forward together. So on Friday, we had a conference call with the head of retail banking, commercial banking, the head of consulting, the head of technology, and the head of training for this very large bank. This is 4 days after their initial call. I mean, I'm a happy camper, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and this was no meeting. This was them calling me. So on the call comes this other person, and they said, ooh, other person, what are you doing on the phone? And he said, you all work for me. I wanted to see what all you big boys were doing on the phone. So every time something was mentioned, he said, no, we tried that 3 years ago, and no. And I kept saying, so what I hear you saying is that if we're thinking of doing X, you would need to make sure that Y would be handled so that it would look like Z. And he, yeah, oh, wow, where have you been? So I became part of their buying decision team. Never discussed my solution, never figured out what their needs were, because first they had a whole set of decisions they had to make about whether to use their tech team, how they would bring in an outside person to work with the tech team, how the tech guys and the users would work with something different than they were used to. They had a lot of different decisions to make. So for about a month, we were all emailing to each other. I was one of the people on the list. I would send my thoughts, and I was on their buying decision team. This is after one call and then another call we all had. I probably put an hour and a half in total. And then they all decided to hire their tech team, not me. So instead of me flying over there, spending, I don't know how many $1,000s figuring out getting the needs assessment and spending a month doing a proposal, I spent an hour and a half. I helped them make a good decision. I just got a call from the guy a year later, and he said, now we're ready for you. We're going to resume conversation, and we have something else for you to do, and now there's no competition internally.
Good that you were sensitive to their needs at that particular point, and also what a great story as well with a happy ending, so to speak.
I helped them make a buying decision rather than sell my product. They're two different things. They had to do that first anyway. Usually salespeople sit and wait while buyers do that and can't figure out where they're going, and that's where they go. So now I've offered a whole new toolkit that sellers can use to help the buyer do all this stuff up front with them, and then they can sell.
Makes sense. Sharon Drew Morgan is our guest here out of Austin on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. The book is called, it's brand new, it's called Dirty Little Secrets, Why Buyers Can't Buy and Sellers Can't Sell. And we will continue this interview here in just a moment. Stay right here. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth back with you here at The Advertising Show. Thanks for listening, and tell a friend, too, as well, at The Advertising Show at theadvertisingshow.com. We have Sharon Drew Morgan out of Austin, author of Dirty Little Secrets, Why Buyers Can't Buy and Sellers Can't Sell. Really, for the whole picture, go get the book. Obviously, that's what we'd like you to do as well. But Sharon, welcome back. Sharon Drew, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Fun being here.
Yeah, Sharon Drew, last segment you, through your story, mentioned that your client was checking on a comparing price, I think was the phrase you used. And I wanted to get your take. You know, in a struggling economy as we are in now, a lot of businesses out there, I think, look to price as a means to overcome a bit of customer resistance to buying. How important is price to a buying decision, especially considering today's turbulent economy? Sharon Drew?
You're not going to like my answer.
We'll love your answer. Go ahead.
Price has nothing to do. How do you like that? The only reason that people talk about price is when they haven't figured out all of the issues that they're going to use to choose from. So let's think about this for a minute. Let's say your grandmother was having her 90th birthday and she had never had a cashmere sweater. And you go to a store, and they have 20 sweaters, and one of them is cashmere. And that one's $180, and all the other ones are $50. Are you going to look at price?
Of course
not.
It
depends on if I'm in the will or not, I guess.
Price probably isn't your criteria. The only reason people discuss price is when they don't know how well to choose. But once you help them and become part of their decision team and help them figure out how to organize how the users and the managers are going to talk to each other and how the tech team is going to work together with them and why or how or if they're going to use the old vendor for anything. Once you've helped them manage all the stuff they have to struggle with anyway, you're on their decision team, and then they meld in your solution and they find the money. It's not even a discussion. One of the problems with sales, which is so fascinating, is that we actually come in at the tail end. But it's the beginning. So we start at the end. We start with the needs analysis and the solution, and the buyer's all confused because they haven't figured out who has to be on the buying decision team, and they haven't figured out if they're going to choose their old vendor. So once you're giving them your solution, they scratch their head and they go, okay, well, how much does it cost? And then they figure out all the other stuff they have to figure out. And by that time, it's probably even too late. That's why we only close 7% of our sales. In fact, the sales field enables failure because they agree that 7% success is okay. And that's because we're coming in at the wrong time. But price is only an issue when we're pushing in and they haven't figured out how to decide. Now, if two things are absolutely exactly the same in value for them, then they will choose the cheapest option. But even the government, when you give them a proposal, they don't choose the cheapest one. They choose the one in the middle. If price was their only criteria, they would choose the bottom. And one of the things I teach my clients to say is, if a price conversation does come up, I hear that price is your only criteria. Well, of course, it's never their only criteria. So they'll say something like, well, it's price and quality. And then you might say, well, I don't have the cheapest price. There are other products out there that are cheaper than mine and have a different solution basis. How would you know that it would be worth paying more for one versus another? Because they're going to have to decide that anyway.
Sharon Drew, one final question. Just staying with this concept for a moment, I hear you loud and clear. If there is only one item in a particular category and you're seeking that particular item and maybe other items of lesser quality are in that same category, you're going to go to the higher priced item. But we've kind of bounced back and forth between consumer buying decisions and business buying decisions. And I just wanted to get your insight. Is there a major difference between a consumer buying decision and a business buying decision, or are they basically the same?
They're the same because at the end of the day, if you don't agree, match your internal criteria with your decision, you're not going to decide. one of the misconceptions in decision-making is that people make emotional decisions. In fact, we never make emotional decisions. Every one of our decisions is based on our beliefs and values. If you're walking down the street, you're not going to kill somebody. That's an emotional decision. But if you heard that someone was going to harm your family, then you might want to learn how to harm somebody before they did that. So you're shifting your criteria. People always make decisions based on their beliefs and their values and their history and their internal whatever. So if a person is going to buy a lipstick, I worked with Clinique. How do you help that woman choose two lipsticks and a mascara rather than just one mascara? That's a choice. Does she go to Lancome for something else? How does she choose one over another? It doesn't matter what the product is. It could be great if she doesn't choose it. So whether it's a consumer or a B2B or a child choosing to clean their room, everyone has to figure out how to make the decision to do something different. One of the problems with advertising and marketing is that it's kind of one-sided and it doesn't actually touch the person. But there is a way to make an interactive ad. So if you have a car ad that's going off into the distance, this gorgeous car, people look at the picture, go, ah, pretty picture, turn the page. But imagine if the ad said, how would you know if it were time to purchase a luxury car? You've now made that ad interactive. And the person's going to be thinking about that for days. Wow, it's the time now. God, I promised myself when I was 40 years old I got a new car like this. So you're teaching them how to make a new decision to purchase rather than just giving them the data that you assume is going to enter their rational mind somewhere or their emotional mind somewhere, and with a pretty picture, they're going to want it. But that's only going to get the people it was going to get anyway. Once you make it an interactive ad, you can have a couple of deviation points farther than just your absolute target market.
Well, here we'll help you make a buying decision now here, and I'm talking about folks who are listening to the show here. Buying decision, A Dirty Little Secrets, Why Buyers Can't Buy and Sellers Can't Sell. Go get the book. It's a great book. Sharon Drew, we are unfortunately out of time, but want to say thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Thank you very much for putting up with my cold also.
We hope you're feeling better too as well. It's as I said before, the website dirtylittlesecretsbook.com. Sharon, thanks again for being here.
Thank you.
On the Advertising Show, back in just a minute with more. Thanks to Sharon Drew Morgan, our guest out of Austin this weekend here at the Advertising Show. And a great interview. Hope you enjoyed it. Alex Ben Block is with us next week, by the way. And Alex is always interesting and fun. And hopefully he'll be back from his July 4th holiday celebrations, which I really know Alex gets into the fireworks and such like that, too, as well. You know, the sparklers. Yeah, yeah. And the bottle rockets. So, anyway, next week it's Alex, contributing editor of The Hollywood Reporter. And we'll talk to Alex then. It is the July the 4th weekend. We're actually, both Brad and I are sitting on the beach right now at this particular mm-hmm. point in time, okay?
Right.
We're not really here. That's what I'm trying to say. We departed.
So. And we're trying to keep our punk lit.
I'm trying to keep my beer cold. That's a good thing.
You know, and I noticed you still have all 10 fingers, so congratulations on that, by the way.
I've never been one to play with fireworks and do not like them and stay far away from them. Thank you.
Ever since that Roman candle fight that we had a few years ago, we stayed away from that.
Yeah, really. I'll never be the same. You shouldn't talk about that, though. You had a bottle fight with something else there. So that's not.
And I think Sharon Drew was celebrating a little early this year.
Well, only we'll have to speculate that. We don't have the answer. Speaking of the beach, yes. You know, we're pre-recording this show, obviously, as we do with the Advertising Show. But you know, British Petroleum, I kind of doubt that by this July 4th weekend that the problem has been fixed. That'd be great if what we're talking about is totally totally wrong at this point. But Google users are looking for the latest news on an estimated 25,000 to 40,000 barrels of oil a day gushing into the Gulf will find at the top of their search results. An ad from BP linking users to the site explains BP's efforts to clean up the oil caused by the explosion. Those same users watching a video on YouTube would find a similar ad, ditto for Facebook. Company taking an aggressive approach to getting its message online, its strategy including popular internet destination ad buys and a social media effort implemented with the help of the PR arm of Ogilvy and Mather. The Gulf of Mexico response hub that BP set up would make most social media strategists proud. Well, that's good. Mm. And possibly the social media strategists have an idea of how to cap the doggone well, which would be a good thing, too, as well. But I doubt that's so. So it's so sad to see what's going on. You know, not only is the environment and the Gulf being absolutely ruined, think of all the hundreds of thousands of people who are affected as a result of the unfortunate ramifications of that, i.e. all of the people who rely on the Gulf as a source of revenue. Tourism, yeah. Fishing, whatever you want to say. Man, what a shame. We just got to pray that these guys get it right and do it soon, basically. What do you have there?
Well, before I go on, you mentioned that, Ray, and we haven't talked about this. You're in Texas there, and I wanted to get your take. Is this have a positive impact on the Texas beaches? Will more people go to Corpus Christi, South Padre, Galveston, because it's not being impacted by the oil spill? Does that offset some of that tourism, or do they go east coast or to the east side of Florida? What really happens there, I wonder?
You know, you would think that, you know, here in the Houston area, the Houston-Galveston area, obviously we are not feeling the effects, at least I'm not aware of the fact that we are. Feeling the effects of what the rest of the Gulf Coast is feeling. And the same would go for Corpus as well. And I really don't have a take on the potential for a shift southward toward the beaches of Padre or, you know, wherever like that. But I can only assume that people are smart enough to say, I'm not going there. I'm going to go farther south, like you said, like to Galveston or south to Padre or something. So who knows? I don't know. It's a good question, but I don't have an answer for it, and I don't. The media here has not been talking about that much, as far as whether tourism is up on our coast. I think we're more in the mode of feeling bad for everybody else.
I would imagine, also, of course, Houston impacted by BP and Transamerica and the other ramifications of the moratorium on offshore drilling, et cetera. So it's more of an economic focus there in Houston as opposed to tourism. I want to mention, Ray, real quickly, Google is expected to roll out a music download service tied to its search engine later this year, followed by a cloud-based subscription service in 2011, according to people familiar with the company. Also, Google plans to launch a digital bookstore later this year. Can you say, thank you, Steve Jobs, go ahead and jump on my gravy train? I mean, come on.
Yeah, really, no kidding. Yeah, they're doing some very interesting things there, and Steve is not done yet, I guess, huh? Something like that.
Yeah.
It's Ray and Brad here at the Advertising Show. Hope you enjoyed the show today, and we look forward to getting together next week with Alex Ben Block, contributing editor of The Hollywood Reporter. Alex is always a real fun person to have on the show. And if you've not experienced Alex before, you will next week, okay? We promise a good show for you as well. Thanks again to Sharon Drew and her last name of Morgan on The Advertising Show. Tell a friend. Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. And, of course, you can visit anytime throughout the week and check out all of the stuff that we have archived. Incredible. We're doing podcasting before the word podcasting was invented, to give you a sense of where we're at here. So there's a lot of good stuff up there, all the way back to 2001, September the 13th, if I recall correctly. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. You better believe it. We'll see you next week.
Under pressure? Get creative concepts fast. Run a global pitch on openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 advertising and marketing creators from 125 countries. Simply take 15 minutes to fill out our online brief form and we'll take care of the rest. From world-class agencies to the best independents to the brightest freelancers, OpenAd.net Global Creatives can deliver creative concepts direct to your desktop in a matter of days. Why not save time, energy, and money by quickly sourcing concepts from the world's brightest creative minds? Visit OpenAd.net and see how we're revolutionizing the way ideas are created and traded. It's simple, it's fast, and it's global. OpenAd.net, the smarter way to create your advertising from the freshest creative minds on the planet. Visit OpenAd.net today to find out more.